Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this January 25th edition of Vantage Point. That is the coronavirus era edition of Vantage Point. Fifth day of the Biden administration edition of the Vantage Point. You know, 99.5 FM. That's on the Pacifica dial, and that's in collaboration with ycradio.org. Well, today we're going to be talking about this is an analysis. We're going to do post-election, we're going to do the insurrection, we're going to do the inauguration, and we'll be joined by none other than Dr. Julianne Malvo momentarily for that conversation. Before we do that, we just also want to acknowledge the passing of Hammering Hank, that is Hammering Hank Aaron, one of the great figures in baseball, and of course legendary for having broken Babe Ruth's record, about a story really of coming up from poverty, but also really a story that we need to explore more. I mean, how much talent was there in the Negro Leagues? He came out of the Negro Leagues, and there was a lot of talent there that got bottled up because of U.S. apartheid. So we just want to give a shout out just into the air of our newest ancestor, Hank Aaron, Hammering Hank Aaron. Want to also join across the dial here at Pacifica, and particularly here at WBAI, in reemphasizing the danger of COVID-19 and our need to be disciplined in that regard. I say reemphasize the danger because these new strands, these new variants, are more contagious. And even if they're not more deadly, though some are, it means that there's just going to be more people who get it. And if more people get it, there'll be more hospitalizations. More hospitalizations inevitably mean more deaths. But it is now coming out that at least one or two of these variants are indeed anywhere from, you know, about 30% more deadly. So please be disciplined. Here's the other thing I want to continue to remind people. Because some people, you know, a lot of people recover. But a good number of people recover, but they have permanent damage. By some estimates, 10%. I've heard estimates as high as 30% of people who recover have some permanent damage from COVID-19. That's not a pretty scene. So we really, we got at least some sane people now who are in charge, who are trying to, you know, deal with moving the nation forward in this regard. One of the things that's being talked about now is double up on your mask, or either get an N95 mask. That is just to protect yourself against this new, more contagious variant that is out there. In addition to that, just want to announce our Community Cares Listening Line. That's with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit, Community Cares Listening Line, which was created for moments like this. That is to say, for people who have anxiety, who are anxious, people who want counseling. We don't provide actual psychological or psychiatric counseling on the line, but we will listen. We have people who are trained social workers, psychiatrists, psychologists, and others who will listen with a sympathetic, culturally appropriate ear. And if you would like to be referred to a clinician, we have the resources to do that. But also dealing with referrals around issues of domestic violence, suicidal tendencies, all of these things we're prepared to do in terms of our Community Cares Listening Line. That line is 877-327-6677, 877-327-6677, and that is also in collaboration here with WBAI. We are delighted that they're partnering with us, and as I said before, most of the responses that we're getting are coming, people are saying, because they are listening to WBAI. Finally, just want to give a shout out belatedly to Dr. Leonard Jeffries, 84 years old. Happened to call him last week on his birthday. I was calling him about something else, which I'll talk about later. Big show we got coming up on February 8th. But Dr. Leonard Jeffries, now at 84 years old. Now to let us join to our microphones, no stranger to WBAI, the Pacifica Network, certainly not Vantage Point. We've had her on many times before. She is known as being sassy, sophisticated, and she is Black America's leading political economist. That is none other than Dr. Julianne Malvo, political commentator, author, president emeritus of Bennett College for Women, and a dear friend and someone that I really, really, really love to have on our show. Dr. Julianne Malvo, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Dr. D. Thanks for the invitation.
All right. Well, you know, you got an open invitation to come and hang out here with us on WBAI. I want to just first of all check in with you. How's your book coming? You've got an exciting new book coming.
I'm slow. I gotta get my mojo back working, but it's coming.
All right. Just quickly, what the title's going to be? Just give us a little tease.
The working title is Black Money Then, Now, and in the Future. Well, we're probably going to switch it up, but we're really talking about what we had then, what we have now, and what we could have.
Right.
Then is really about the ways that after enslavement, Black people raised money, did entrepreneurship, did work. And then after Reconstruction, they took it from us. Now is just looking at the data of what is going on, and the future is just kind of my blue skies piece of the book.
Right.
What could we have?
Right. Well,
there's a chapter that actually I'm going to send to you, but I want to talk about reparations and what it could mean. I mean, what could this mean if we were actually ever made whole?
Right.
You know, what could it mean if our HBCUs were fully and appropriately funded?
Right.
So, you know, the challenge for me, Dr. Daniels, is that I get into this stuff and I go crazy. you wouldn't even understand.
Right. I know it's difficult, but one of the things you've also talked about and we've had you, I want to connect it to another question, because you have really been putting out here to get people to understand. I may not be stating it correctly, the impact of white economic envy on the destruction and theft of black communities, lynching, wealth, and all of that. Is that something you're also going to be talking about in your new book, or is that a whole nother book in and of itself?
No, we talk about it some. We might delve deeper into it later, but we talk about it some. I mean, the whole notion of white economic envy and how it basically played into Black physical destruction is something, you know, I don't know. You were probably at one of the meetings when I said I was in the Library of Congress and I was reading something and I said, ooh! And one of the brothers came back and said, sister, you can't make all them noises. I said, read this. He said, ooh! It was horrible. It was about a brother who had said something untoward, allegedly said something untoward to a white woman. They took everything he had. Everything he had.
Right.
His cows, his everything. But, you know, there's so many stories of that. And when you read this, you know, I have to try to compartmentalize it. You know, because much of this resonates with my own family and things that happened to us in Mississippi. And white people gave us some land. Well, that's a whole other story. We don't talk about that. But then the white people took it back. So one day we woke up and they had a fence on our land. Like, now, this is our land. And I really one day should really do some research. But one of my cousins, who was like as crazy as I am, you know, we don't know what happened to him, but he disappeared. And I think it's because he challenged the people. And then my auntie, my great aunt, my grandmother's sister, was, she was like, I won't call her an Uncle Tom, but she could do Mr. Bojangles in a heartbeat. She was really afraid of white people. She was totally afraid of white people. And when you start thinking about it, you're like, what made you so afraid of white people? And she would say to me things like, child, don't ask no questions. And there's so many hidden stories like that, Ron. So many hidden stories like that. Where, and even where our people did not even dare to delve into what had happened to them. So, you know, when we talk about reparations as an example, some people say, like Darity and those, you have to prove it. No, you just have had to live it.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, let me ask you this question. This is sort of a related question. Is the insurrection that we saw live, I mean, you know, this was like live in real time, is in some ways this whole notion of white grievance and all of this, is this in some ways illustrative of white economic envy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these folks want to take the country back. Take it back from whom? We built this sucker. There would not be a capital if it had not been for African-American labor. There would not be a White House, I call it the house that enslaved people built, if it had not been for African-American labor. These people are in a deep state of denial. They do not want to acknowledge what African descendant people have offered to this country, and they are tripping. I think the election of President Obama was an opportunity for them. I mean, they've always been underground, so let's not make it clear. It's always been there. But the election of President Obama slapped them in the face. They're like, who is this Negro who is now in charge of the United States of America? And so they began to organize. Then they got, you know, the orange orangutan, who basically incited them and talked about, let's take America back, make America great again. Well, great again for who?
Right.
You want a great again for us? At any point in time, we tried to make it great. We had poets like Maya Angelou. We had people like Dr. King, who always talked about the high road, but these folks were committed to the low road.
Right.
And so we had this basically pushback that you had a black president, and you ended up with a total, excuse my language, honky. A total honky. Who basically said all kind of stuff, talked about all of us. And so, you know, Ron, here we are. White people pre-Obama were prepared to be racist but to hide their nonsense. Trump gave them the opportunity to forgive my word, trump their nonsense, to just stomp it out there and say, here I am.
That's right.
We have not, we are the, I won't even say on the left, we were sent, because it's not even the left. I mean, if you look at the left continuum, there are many of us who, you know, basically want to turn it out. There are many who want reasonable legislation. There are many who simply want to see neoliberal policy. That's a continuum in the Democratic Party. But there is a continuum over there. I don't know what they're doing.
I'm with you on that. It used to be way back in the day, but now it's worse and worse and worser. Let me shift quickly to Kamala Harris, our new vice president. I understand you even had a chance to go down there and physically witness this day of the inauguration. What were your thoughts about witnessing Kamala Harris stand straight, and she said, like her mama told her to do, and put her shoulders back and take that oath of office?
I adore Kamala. I've known her a long time. didn't know her when she first came into the San Francisco political scene. You know, I'm a native San Franciscan. I think that, I mean, first of all, the entire inauguration opened up my soul. I couldn't stop grinning. I truly couldn't stop grinning. And that's what I was doing. I was just grinning. Between Biden, who didn't knock anything out of the park, but did his reconciliation thing. Kamala, who basically always pulls on history, and she's a great orator. But that little sister, Amanda Gorman, lordy, lordy, lord, lord, lord. I just kept sitting there thinking about Dr. Maya, and I had a mixtape going in my head. Calling Nina Simone, Here Comes the Sun. What's his name? Whitehead, Ain't No Stopping Us Now. I mean, I had a mixtape going in my head as that little girl was speaking. She was amazing, fantastic. She was. And I came home and was talking to my, what's her name, Alexa. Like, okay, play this for me again. you know? But so it was an amazing opportunity to see young, gifted, and black.
Yes.
After Dr. Ron, we had seen old, addled, and white. And, you yes. know, that man ran himself up out of here. Praise the Lord, and thank the sweet potatoes. Praise the Lord, man, and out of here. But, you know, the bottom line is that we saw a shifting of the guard, an amazing shifting of the guard. And so I could not do anything but grin. Seriously, grin. Now, I grinned on Wednesday, but we have a lot of work to do. Let me say one more thing about Wednesday. 45 created a commission called the 1776 Commission that was supposed to put together something called patriotic education. Ben Carson and others were on the commission. Not a one was a historian. not a one.
Surprise, surprise.
They dropped this report, which is so flawed that even an 11-year-old would say, what's wrong with this? But they dropped this report on Dr. King's birthday, which is like yet another Trump slap in the face.
That's right. But
that's what he does. He slaps us in the face. The first day he was in there, Joe Biden dissolved that 1776 commission. He's like, nah, we ain't doing this up in here.
That's right.
And this is kind of what I said, what a difference a day makes.
Right, right.
He just said nope to the nope to the nope, nope, nope.
Right.
I, you know, 45 started that commission in September. He asked them to come up with a report. If you read the report, and any of y'all who listen, just Google it. It is the most ignorant spit you have seen in your life. But the most insulting part of it is, number one, it was dropped on Dr. King's birthday. Number two, it quotes Dr. King extensively. Number three, it quotes Abraham Lincoln. What's wrong with y'all? But see, this is why what a difference a day makes.
Right, absolutely.
Joe Biden said no to the no to not, not, not.
Right.
And so I hope that he will continue to do that.
Let me shift to that new day. That shift was, well, let me put it in a question form. How important was, in fact, the black vote to that possibility?
Oh, it was critical. It was critical. If there was not a black vote, there would not be a President Joe Biden. I mean, remember, he came out of Iowa and New Hampshire dragging and pitiful. And what happened? Jim Clyburn.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels. I'm sorry if I didn't receive your call, but if you'd be kind enough to leave me your number, I promise to call back as soon as possible. Please speak slowly and clearly, and you have a good and productive.
Pardon the interruption.
Dr. Ron, are we here?
You know, I forgot to, I have to put my phone off, and then sometimes I leave it on, and today I forgot to turn it off. So anyway, go right ahead.
No worries, no worries. I said if it were not for Joe, not Joe Biden, Jim Clyburn, and frankly, his wife, now deceased, Emily Clyburn, they embraced then Vice President Joe Biden in his quest. And because they embraced him, and because Clyburn has such a big foot in South Carolina, people voted for him. He knocked it out the park. And what Clyburn showed is, first of all, his own power, but he also showed that black folks have power, and therefore black folks, and especially black women,
that's
really
right,
put the you know, basically pushed him up. He was drowning in negativity until black women pushed him up. And so he owes black folk a lot, and I hope he understands that and pays us back.
Right. Well, not only that, is on the presidential election, but, you know, also, you know, the other, I call it righteous irony of what happened in Georgia, because we are all praying about Georgia and looking for deliverance, and there was a providential victory. And again, the edge was provided by black voters.
Well, Georgia was such a fantastic win. And let's just all lift up the name of Stacey Abrams and clap our hands whenever we can, because that sister did it. She took pain and turned it into power. She lost the governor's race by not much, but she decided to start an organization, Fight Fair, and she and her colleagues pulled black folks off of their couches and onto the voting polls.
Right.
And that's what we have to do. Now, when we look at all of that, the momentum of that was not just Georgia. Her momentum picked up in other places. But in Georgia, what we saw was Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff basically taking it over. Now, we have to be clear and we have to be present. Warnock is going to come up for re-election in 2 years. Ossoff has a full term. So what are we going to do to circle ourselves around Warnock? But, you know, that was called an old happy day moment. it was an old happy day moment. It was wonderful. And
right,
for at least 2 years, Democrats have the House, the Senate, and the presidency.
And that's the point that I wanted to ask you. So what are your expectations of the Biden-Harris administration? Because that critical vote in Georgia meant that Democrats now control all three branches of Congress. Now, people should understand that when you say that, not all Democrats are progressives or liberal. You have some moderates and some conservatives, but they're Democrats. So some people forget that and they say, oh, well, the Democrats control everything. So, but it's not necessarily going to be that easy. But what are your expectations? What do you think this means? There's a whole discussion, for example, about the filibuster and whether to use budget reconciliation or not. I mean, I think some people are a little bit frustrated that when the Republican, I call them hypocrites and enablers, have power, they dip the stick. They do not play. They advance their interests. But it looks like the Democrats, when they get power, want to play nice.
Well, that's a problem. I mean, President Obama, he came in, played nice while he had the Congress and the Senate. He played too nice, and he got smacked upside his head because of it. I hope that Biden, who was his vice president at the time, took note of that. But here's what we know, Ron. Here's what we know. We know that Democrats can move things. We know that every Democrat is not down. Folks like Joe Manchin want to appease their centrist voters. But there are also folks like Mitt Romney who want to support President Biden. So how do we get the basically stimulus package, stimulus PPP package out? And that's a big thing. That's the most important thing. I understand there was a call yesterday where there were 16 people, 8 Democrats, 8 Republicans, talking about basically relief. And there was some pushback. There are folks who feel like we're going into too much debt. But you know what? The debt we're going into is not debt that individuals are experiencing. It's group debt. If you are a person who can't pay your mortgage, if you need help, the macro story does not work for you.
That's right.
And we really have so much microeconomic pain and macroeconomic exuberance. The stock market is doing very well, but less than half of our people have stake in the stock market. So when you report, I'm telling reporters who are listening, that the stock market is going up, what does that mean to Bubba, Bebe, and Joe? And the answer is not much.
Right.
So there's an opportunity for us to try to bridge this gap, but the opportunity has not been taken because we have essentially a possibility of hiding behind the macro statistics.
Right, right. Well, certainly we got to push very, very hard. I want to ask you a couple of other questions quickly. One is one of the things that the Biden administration has pushing, and by the way, they also, I listened to a press briefing today, they are going to speed up the image of Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill, I think it is. So, of course, the orange orangutan, as you called him, was blocking that. That's going to be speeded up. That's symbolic, but also substantive in a real way. They're also pushing out a racial equity lens on policy. And I guess my question is racial equity lens a substitute for reparations?
Not at all. There are three things going on that we have to be clear about. One is good public policy. Good public policy deals with racial equity. Two, good public policy deals with healing. But three, reparations deals with repair. They're three different things. Do not confuse good public policy for reparations. If you decide, Brother Biden, Sister Harris, to target home ownership to black people, that's good public policy. Because there's a gap. 70% of white people own their homes, 46% of black people do. My numbers may be a little off. But that's good public policy. Reparations says, how do you fix this?
Right. Absolutely. And you also referenced reconciliation, because there is a lot of push, which is kind of easy to talk about. Even between the administration is talking about unity and togetherness and all that, and I'm not adverse to that, but within the scheme of restorative justice or reparatory justice, there's a lot of discussion about reconciliation, but it would have seemed that the reconciliation has to be put in its proper perspective in relationship to the issue of repair.
Well, precisely. I mean, you can't have a kumbaya conference where we all join hands and hum without saying this was damage that was done to your community and we want to fix it. And that's what's been missing from our country to black people. So you have, I don't think we should do the South Africa thing, and we see what happened there. People whined and cried. They didn't mean to do it, blah, blah. No. What needs to happen is that we need to have a total Wash that starts in 1865 that talks about who took what and when, where, and how. And we cannot simply sit there and say, oh, we're going to do truth and reconciliation. What does that mean? And why folks are going to go and sit there and put their chest to their shoulders and say, are we so sorry? Hell to the no. You so sorry, give me my money.
Dr. Julianne Malvo, Black America's leading political economist. As I said before, she's sassy, she's sophisticated, she'll tell you straight up, and she don't be playing. She has a new book coming out shortly, and when it does, we're certainly going to talk about it here on Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network. And Dr. Malvo, we thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your thoughts with us. And no question about it, we'll have you back soon. So thank you. Really appreciate your time today.
It was a pleasure to be with you, my brother.
All right. That was Dr. Julianne Malvo sharing her thoughts. It's going to be your turn next, if you will, because we're going to open up the phones and hear your reactions, to not only what Dr. Malvo had to say, but your perspectives on the vital issues of the day. The number to call is 212-209-2881, 212-209-2881. Let me make sure I check that 2881. That is correct. What I want to ask the audience today is, there were two different days. There was the insurrection, and 1 week later, there was the inauguration, a tale of 2 days. What were your feelings? What did that mean to you as you were observing the two different days, 1 week apart, the white nationalist insurrection, which is I'm calling it, and the inauguration? What were your feelings about that? Any other question relates to what Dr. Malvo was saying? If you had your wish list, what are your goals? What are your policy prescriptions? What would you hope for in the first 100 days, which will end on April 30th, the first 100 days? Let me quickly just say that on February 8th, we're going to have a special fundraising piece here on Vantage Point. We're going to be looking at this issue of white nationalism. White nationalism, the enemy of black nationalism. And none other than Dr. Leonard Jeffries, whom we talked about earlier, is going to be joining me, as well as Dr. Greg Carr, as we examine the thought of Dr. John Henry Clark and his speeches about that, about this issue. And we have a premium that we're going to be using. And I want to raise, we want to have a hell of a conversation, a relevant conversation, but we want to use that relevant conversation to raise some significant dollars for WBAI on February 8th. That's forthcoming. April 30th will be the 100 days, and the Institute of the Black World 21st Century has always done a report card on the first 100 days, and actually WBAI, WPFW have joined in that process. So we're already beginning to talk about the first 100 days of the administration and getting a report card on the Biden administration. But right now, our phones are open. You can get in immediately at 212-209-2881. That's 212-209-2881.
No, Professor. No, Professor. The correct number, sorry to call the jump in, but the correct number to call is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Back to you.
Number got pushed around. That's what happened. Something happened on my sheet. I'm sorry. 212-20. I thought it was in that, somehow was not sounding right. That's the guest line. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We'll get you into the conversation. And I deliberately wanted to create a little bit more time today because we went over in our interviews the last 2 weeks, so we didn't get in as many callers as we would like. And once again, your impressions of the tale of 2 days, the insurrection, the white nationalist insurrection that took place, And then, you know, a week later, an inauguration, which Dr. Malvo talked about, and she talked about her feelings. What were your feelings? Also, your wish list for the first 100 days. What are your goals? What would you like to see done in the first 100 days? Again, now, forgive me for misstating it, but now we got it straight. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. The phones are wide open now for you to call and give your perspectives. Again, having heard Dr. Julianne Malvo talk about a range of different issues and questions related to, again, the election itself, the role of Black voters in that election, her perspectives on the insurrection, connected it to a theme that she's been developing on white economic envy, because you hear a lot about white grievance. And in that regard, by the way, that's not an indictment. This is not a generalization. This is certainly not speaking to the entirety of the white population in this country, because absent that support from various sectors within white America, President Obama would not have been elected. So he didn't get elected alone, simply on the Black vote. But there is this sector that the MAGA folk, the MAGA isms that were being reflected, where people want to go back to the good old days of white male patriarchy, if you will. And this is something that is posing a real danger, because these folks are serious, showing up with weapons, threatening to use improvised explosive devices and everything. So this is a certain moment of reckoning in American history. So again, a stark contrast. Though, you know, the city of Washington, D.C. was locked down. People were leaving town. Stores were boarded up. I mean, you had, what, 25,000 troops on hand. So it was definitely locked down on Inauguration Day. But it was an interesting program. And so, again, we're asking for your reflections. If you saw it, if you heard it here on WBI, the Pacifica Network. And then again, what are your goals? What are your thoughts about an agenda for the first 100 days? Again, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. You can get instantly into the conversation. While we're waiting for callers, let me just simply reiterate the concern about the dangers of the COVID pandemic, particularly these variants that are showing up that are more contagious and more deadly. Urging people to please have discipline, please be caring and respectful of each other. It's not about you. It's about we, us, and our, not me, myself, and I. Because, you know, I mean, I care about everybody, but if you didn't care about yourself, the problem is you could be shedding the virus because you are not worried about it. But the question is, you know, help hurting others. And one of the things we pointed out is that even if you recover, the data is showing that there's large numbers of people who are permanently damaged, and that's not a good thing. So double up on your mask or get yourself an N95 mask, if you will, and that will help hopefully provide some protection. Again, early on, we talked about the listening line that you can call if you have anxiety, concerns, if you want to get further information about what to do in this period, essential workers, doctors, nurses, but just ordinary people out there, families who are just feeling tense and uptight in this period. We certainly want to give you an opportunity to call the Community Cares listening line, 877-327-6677. That's 877-327-6677. Again, open lines at 212-209-2877. We're sampling people. I got it. We're sampling people's impressions of the tale of 2 days, the white insurrection that took place and the inauguration. And what are your hopes for the first 100 days? Let's go to our first caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, how you doing? My hopes for the first 100 days is to uncover some truth. And I like to uncover some truth right now. Is this Marvel there? I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name right, but I'd like to ask her a question.
No, Dr. Malvo is, this is an open conversation with the professor. This is the soapbox section, so you can ask.
I wish she was around because she wrote that book. And, you know, I've been fighting racism my whole life. I'm Southern European. I remember, I go back a long way. I remember when I was a kid, racism used to give me a sick feeling, a physical sick feeling in my stomach. I've been always anti-racist. Martin Luther King was a very important person to me. You know, later I got into Malcolm X and whatever, but I always came back to Martin Luther King. Anyway, so here I was, a young boy. I had black friends and stuff. When I was 18 years old, I was walking down the street, and a black man looked at me and said, "I'm going to kill me a white man tonight. I am not lying when I'm saying this. I'm giving you that example because throughout my life, I had racism directed against me. Am I saying all black people are racist and bad? No. No. What I'm saying are black people are just people, just like white people. With identity politics, we have demonized white men. They have become the scapegoat for all the problems in the world. And I think that's unfair. Am I saying all white men are perfect? No. I'm just saying they're people, too. And I think we got that. I think a lot of progressives, especially like the younger ones, they don't see that perspective yet. They don't see the big picture about what's going on and how complex things are. Okay, but you know the good news is I stayed progressive, and today I am talking to you, and I am an anti-progressive. I mean, I am a progressive. I'm anti-racist, and I've grown to fight all types of racism, both white and black nationalism, and I see problems. When I see things that happen in, you know, it's disgusting what happened in Washington, D.C., but I see that being fed. I see that being fed by people.
And by the way, is there any equivalent such assault by black people on a monument or anything of that nature that you're aware of?
I don't know. I didn't research that.
How many white people have been lynched in this country by black people?
Quite a few. If you talk about murders and stuff, you know.
No. We're talking about the public extrajudicial gatherings. And this is the problem with that. So you're minimizing it in a way. You're being derisive, really, of Black history in that regard, because you're doing Trump's. There's some good on both sides. There's some good people. There is no moral equivalency. Of course, there are individuals who may say, "I don't like this white person," or "I don't like this black." All of that's prejudice. Racism is prejudice plus power. The power of we're talking about institutional structural. Institutional structural racism, and to the extent
that
you cannot show any pattern of the systematic exploitation, domination, exclusion, lynching, or violence by black people against white people in this country. It does not exist. So here you are taking an instance of your particular experience where somebody said something negative to you, and I regret they did, and now you're going to do a 1776 report, which does the same thing and says, it's identity politics. It's the real deal. I'm sorry, my friend. I hear you, and you've come and you've offered that perspective before, but I'm just not sympathetic to it. Look, appreciate your call, and I hope you remain progressive. Others can call at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877 gets you into the conversation. Do we have another call? If so, you're on the air. You're on Vantage Point.
My name is Davina Gallimore, and I wish for the agenda they work on immigration, because I'm an immigrant myself, and I think they need to work on bringing more immigrants, you know, who some of them don't have a green card. I hope they work on that.
And by the way, let me just say, I appreciate your call. On the very first major piece of there's two or three major pieces of legislation But one of them is, first of all, COVID. Obviously, we got to address this issue of getting this ugly, deadly pandemic under control. And I must say that this, the former, the Agent Orange, the orange orangutan, or whatever it is that Dr. Julianne Malvo called him, is responsible for the murder, the death of thousands and thousands of people. You will see a difference with this particular administration. But one of the major pieces of legislation that is on the table is comprehensive immigration reform, how to create a pathway to citizenship for, at least the number was given, some 11 million undocumented people within these United States of America. That is a significant change from the previous administration. So that's your 100-day wish, and already it's on the agenda. So thank you so much for calling. Appreciate you so much. Others can call at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon, brother. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for your show.
Thank you.
We're going to say it's like Dickens out here. It's the best of times and it was the worst of times. That's what it
you
is.
Got me. You peaked my hole. You peaked my hole, Carl.
If you're rich, then this is the best of times because their stocks keep going up. Their money keep going up. They ain't got to show up for work.
That's
if you're an essential worker, it's the worst of times. You don't need no N95 mask. You don't need no disinfectant. Get on in there and work till you drop dead. So I don't see how much has changed, but we will see. But I know one thing. When I heard that man get on and say a black man said he was going to kill him, a white man today, well, I guess he didn't kill that one, did he? But on top of that, if they so afraid, they just keep moving right on into Harlem, and we don't touch them. So I get so incensed when I hear that type of talk.
Well, but you know, you make a good point.
You can name a white man lynched, but you can name hundreds of black people lynched. I'm so sick of it. I'm just so sick of it.
Gentrification, by the way, is a big issue, the displacement of black people and black culture. But you don't find black people running around attacking white people, you know, and driving them out of the community. You don't do that. That's just not who we are. Now, if you have somebody who may have an isolated incident in that, but to take an isolated incident or one or two occasions and to then elevate that to the same level of the thousands and thousands of black people that were brutalized, women who were raped, slavery by another name and all that, really shows a level of ignorance and lack of knowledge, either willful or unwillful, that helps support a kind of self-righteous position that is offensive. Appreciate it, my brother. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Again, I'm looking at the insurrection and the inauguration, a tale of 2 days. And it's like a tale of two cities. I was kind of playing on that. And my brother who just called in talked about, well, it's a tale of two worlds too. It's Wall Street and Main Street. And, you know, and some people don't have no options and alternatives. They just got to go out, and people are being told to just go do it and put your life on the line and all this kind of madness that has to be straightened out. But also, what are your aspirations for the first 100 days? We just got a few minutes left. One person called and said comprehensive immigration reform. If we have another caller, good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yeah, my name is Menelik. I'm calling.
Great name.
I just called to reedify the fact that, you know, they talk about all of the killing that has been taking place in the United States based on white people or based on black people killing, but they don't mention about all of the killing that they did during slavery and after the Reconstruction period, and how they used to lynch black people maybe 100 a week. I don't know the statistics, but I know between 18, my grandmother and my grandfather came up here during that great migration to the North. And it's kind of ironic how white people always seem to pattern themselves as being so holistic and so pure and so holy, and all of these holy rollers, they keep pretending like they so out of it. And the United States government and this institution that they established was gung-ho against all people of color.
Right.
I tend to believe that this corona is some kind of institutional way of getting rid of large numbers of people on the planet. Since 1939, when I was a kid, they had the world thing established by John Davison Rockefeller III, planet control, population control, a whole Pacific thing about that. I don't know.
Mm. All right. Well, appreciate your call, my brother. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, you have a nice, Mr. Daniels.
Yeah, be safe now. Please be safe. I think maybe squeeze in one more call if we have one. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, good afternoon to you, my brother.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry. All I wanted to say was I heard you earlier talking about what happened with Obama at his first term. I'm hoping that Biden and the rest of them do not play this the way Brother Obama did the first time. I mean, trying to reach out among, you know what I'm saying? You can reach out among the other side and try to get them to work with them. But realize, too, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Get your thing done. Don't waste right. time trying to reach out over to Mitch McConnell and a group of people who half the time ain't got no respect for you anyway. And will make it their business to work against you, because you're right. just wasting time that you will not be able to get back. And at the second, and in the midterm, they'll cut you in half. Because usually, what happens is we both know, is no matter who's on top, when the midterm comes, the other side usually does pretty well.
Right, right. And by the way, President Obama has said that he made a mistake. He's publicly said that he made a mistake in being overly optimistic about bipartisanship, which means that, you know, many people are saying budget reconciliation, whatever is necessary. If the Republicans are not willing to go along, please do not give Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, the same tool that he used to block President Obama. He said openly that I am going to make President Obama a one-term president. Of course, he did not succeed with that, but he obstructed. And by the way, these are the same people who tolerated the orange man. They tolerated Trumpism and MAGAism, and now they want to, you know, and that's why the trial becomes important, because they need to be on the record to see who is willing, who has the guts to vote against, to convict someone who incited. Can you imagine if black people had done such things? I mean, you're talking about there'd be people would already be hanging. Anyway, my brother, appreciate so much your call. Hang in there. All right. Well, we, got out of the blocks a little slow today because I got to get these numbers right. I made a mistake on my little sheet here. I got my numbers all up here. Got my numbers all confused, but that's all right. I think we had a great conversation today. Again, want to constantly urge people to please, 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 let's look after each other. This is a dangerous, dangerous virus out here, and we have to do all those things. Wear the mask, wash your hands, do social distancing, take care of our neighbors, love thy neighbor as thyself. My pastor preached on that yesterday. I think that's important to do. We do have this Community Cares listening line, 877-327-6677. I know that's right, 877-327-6677. If you have inquiries, you're having issues in the home or whatever, you need information, we can certainly provide that. And again, forecasting, we're going to have a hell of a show on February 8th, in which we're going to be talking about white nationalism, the enemy of black nationalism. Next week is Mayor Raj J. Baraka. We have a monthly segment, State of Newark Report, and I'm sure he's going to be giving a State of the Nation report. So we thank you so much for being with us today. By the way, you can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Ron Daniels, and you can follow me on Instagram also at Dr. Ron Daniels. This is the professor. We'll see you again here next week on Vantage Point.